नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय कुत्राशिषा श्रुतिसुका मृगतृष्णिरूपा वेदं कलेवं खक्वेदं कलेव रमशेष रुजं विरोह निर्विद्यते न तु जनो यदपीति विद्वान् कामानलं मधुलवाय समयं दुराफाय कुत्राशिषा श्रुतिसुका मृगतृष्णिरूपा वेदं कलेव रमशेष रुजं विरोह निर्विद्यते न तु जनो यदपीति विद्वान् खामानलं मधुलवाय समयं दुराफाय
In this material world, every living entity desires some future happiness, which is exactly like a mirage in the desert. Where is water in the desert? Or, in other words, where is happiness in this material world? As for this body, what is its value? It is merely a source of various diseases. The so-called philosophers, scientists, and politicians know this very well, but nonetheless, they aspire for temporary happiness. Happiness is very difficult to obtain, but because they are unable to control their senses, they run after the so-called happiness of the material world and never come to the right conclusion. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. There is a song in the Bengali language which states, I constructed this home for happiness, but unfortunately there was a fire and everything has now been burned to ashes. This illustrates the nature of material happiness. Everyone knows it, but nonetheless one plans to hear or think something very pleasing. Unfortunately, all of one's plans are annihilated in due course of time. There are many politicians who planned empire, supremacy, and control of the world, but in due course of time, all their plans and empires, even the politicians themselves, were vanquished. Everyone should take lessons from Prahlad Maharaj about how we are engaged in so-called temporary happiness through bodily exercises for sense enjoyment. All of us repeatedly make plans which are all repeatedly frustrated. Therefore, one should stop such plan making. One cannot stop a blazing fire by constantly pouring ghee upon it. One cannot satisfy oneself by increasing plans for sense enjoyment. The blazing fire is Bhava Mahadavagni, the forest fire of material existence. This forest fire occurs automatically without endeavor. We want to be happy in the material world, but this will never be possible. We shall simply increase the blazing fire of desires. Our desires cannot be satisfied by illusory thoughts and plans. Rather, we have to follow the instructions of Lord Krishna. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja. Then we shall be happy. Otherwise, in the name of happiness, we shall continue to suffer miserable conditions. In this material world, every living entity desires some future happiness, which is exactly like a mirage in the desert. Where is water in the desert? Or in other words, where is happiness in this material world? As for this body, what is its value? It is merely a source of various diseases. The so-called philosophers, scientists, and politicians know this very well, but sometimes they aspire for temporary happiness. But nonetheless, they aspire for temporary happiness. Happiness is very difficult to obtain, but because they are unable to control their senses, they run after the so-called happiness of the material world and never come to the right conclusion. I am very grateful to be back amongst all of you. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9, entitled Prahlad Pacifies the Lord with Prayers. We learn from the great souls what is truly of value in life. Maya, the illusory energy, is all powerful within this creation. And as far as spiritual principles, in so many places throughout time, people have given us different instructions. What we should aspire for, how we should aspire for it. So many religious principles, so many goals in life. But the Lord, he tells us, Mahajano yena gatasa panta. We will understand the essence of what really is the treasure of life by following in the footsteps of the great souls. What is great personalities like Prahlad praying for? And why? And how do they live to achieve that goal? That is where we will find the fulfillment of the aspiration of the soul. Material desires go very deep into the heart, due to conditionings since time immemorial. when we are habituated, even if we theoretically have some understanding that this is not good for me, still, it is very difficult to overcome. Many people in the world today, due to foolishness, bad association, they do things like smoking cigarettes. They become addicted for many years. And then they know it's going to kill them. And even they can see the symptoms of death coming. But because that habit is so strong, it's very, very difficult to give it up. It takes determination. It takes tolerance. It takes engaging the mind and senses in superior activities. So all material life is very similar to that. Here in it is explained that scientists, including doctors, they see the fallibility of the body. Politicians, they see what happens within this world. They're dealing with it. Philosophers, they've been studying the subject generation after generation. But nonetheless, they cannot give up striving for material enjoyment. Prahlad Maharaj compares material enjoyment to a mirage in the desert. It's actually all mental. What the mind perceives as happiness is very, very subjective. The senses have a certain experience, but according to how the mind is programmed due to our previous conditionings, we interpret certain things as happiness. Just like, for instance, the ears are basically the same kind of flesh and the same mechanism for everyone. Now, the music that your parents enjoy might be disgusting to you. And the music that you enjoy might be totally hellish for your parents. Any of you ever have that experience? When I was young and played music, my parents would just say, "What? Why are you playing that horrible noise?" And when I would hear them playing their music, I would say, "That's so boring. How could you tolerate it?" What is it? It's the same sound coming through the same physical mechanism. The difference is your mind. Your mind is programmed to think something's enjoyable and something's not enjoyable at all. The eyes. Basically, the eyes are made of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Yes, all of us. And we all have human eyes. Human eyes. We should try to humanize ourselves, actually. But so when we see Radha Gopinath Prabhu, he has his head shaved and tilak and sika and saffron robes. How many of us just think, how beautiful? Viva! Be careful, Prabhu. A lot of Mataji said. Now, for someone else, If you were to go to Saudi Arabia and walk around like this, they would not think he's beautiful. Even some people in India, they think, what nonsense? No hair? Disgusting. So really, what is beautiful? It is said beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Everything about our senses. You know, Gauranga Prabhu likes to eat chilies. There's not enough chilies in his prasad. He's not very interested. Yes, Govinda Prabhu? In fact, he arranged two diets for the brahmacharis, one with chilies and one without. Why is that? For some people, chilies are, it's like eating fire. It's painful. And for others, to not eat chilies, it's painful. No, we all have the same basic tongue mechanisms. It's the mind. So we are all perceiving things according to how our mind is programmed to perceive them. And therefore, what is sense gratification? Essentially, sense gratification is just the mind is just longing for pleasure. And it interprets different types of material sensations according to how it is conditioned to be pleasure. It's like when I was in Italy, they have all varieties of prasad there. They gave me this drink. They said it was non-alcoholic beer. And they were praising it, that there's no alcohol in this. It's completely bona fide. And I drank it, and it was miserable. I said, just because it's not alcoholic, that doesn't mean it's good. It's, they said, no, it tastes exactly as the alcohols. And I said, you really like this? And everyone at the table said, yes, this is fantastic. This is wonderful. So everything is so relative according to our conditionings. And that's not the senses, that's the mind. The mind is interpreting all these sense perceptions. One man's food is another man's poison. But because Ananda Mayobhyashat, because the soul by nature is Ananda, full of bliss, because it is part of Krishna, who Sachit Ananda. Therefore, we are always looking for pleasure. We are pleasure-seeking by our constitutional nature. And when the soul, its need to experience the pleasure of Krishna's love and love for Krishna is clouded over by the false ego, the ahankar, then the mind, this very, very powerful material element, has to find pleasure somewhere. But it's forgotten what our real pleasure is. And therefore, it's looking for it through the senses. The mind is a subtle sense. And the mind looks for it in grosser, grosser experiences. But everything, all the sensory pleasures, as well as the subtle pleasures of profit, adoration, distinctions, fame, popularity, all of these things, Matra sparashas tu konte asitos na sukha dukada agama payano nityas tamsta diksha svabharata. They are coming and going. They are temporary. Nothing remains. Prahlad Maharaj, he's a little boy. He's only 5 years old when he's offering these prayers. And he saw his father's life. He conquered a major portion of the universe. He had fame. He had power. He had wealth. And he could enjoy anything and everything he wanted. And he wasn't shy about it either. If there was anyone from Indra down who had anything that he wanted, he just took it from that person and enjoyed it. There was no question. And he had no restrictions. Any woman, any material article, any intoxication, nobody could possibly have anything better than him. Because if they did, he took it from them. There was no competition. He was the world champion, sense enjoyer. He was the universal champion. How many of you know somebody that have something that you want? Don't raise your hand, please. Sometimes people live their whole life wanting such things, but they just can't get it. But imagine Hiranyakashipu's position. Everything and anything he wanted as far as material enjoyment or material possessions, within minutes, it was his. He just took it. He didn't have to get a job to try to earn it. He didn't have to defeat somebody. He would just take it. That was his power of enjoyment. He ate anything he wanted. He drank anything he wanted. He had sex with anyone he wanted. He possessed anything he wanted. He lived in Indra's palace, the most beautiful palace in Swargaloka. And he probably redecorated it according to his own tastes. But what was Prahlad's conclusion? He was never satisfied. Prahlad was watching him the whole time, just observing. He was never satisfied. He was always angry. He was always wanting something else. He was always in anxiety about somebody else. And in the end, was all taken away in a most embarrassing way. But Lord Narsingadev, the way he dispatched Hiranyakashipu, everyone that Hiranyakashipu was trying to impress was watching. Yes? He had a massive false ego. All of the rakshasas, all the dayatas, you know, he's put a lot of energy in impressing them, because it's not just a matter of having things. You also, such people, they demand honor, respect, like that, showing off what I can do. And right in front of everyone, he was just, Lord Narasimhadev just treated him like a big, hungry cat and a tiny little mouse. Yes? Just picked him up, put him on his lap, and ripped him to pieces. Hare Krishna. Everything was finished in a moment. Well, Prahlad was not just seeing that happening to Hiranyakashipu. He was seeing that that was happening to everyone. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, time I am. In the form of time, Krishna's doing that to everyone. Yes? May not be so dramatic, but it's going to happen in its own way. Just as Narasimhadev did away with Hiranyakashipu, that same Lord Narasimhadev in his form of time is going to destroy everything and everyone. And it happened so quickly. Now, materialistic people, they see it all around. They see at any time death is coming. I just saw America is supposed to be such a good place. Well, according to federal statistics, it was in a newspaper, 1/4 of Americans suffer mental illness. It's 1 out of every 4 are suffering mental illness in some way. That means they're really in anxiety. They're not happy. They're not right. So much depression, so much anxiety, so much false hopes. People are dying. People are suffering. We see it all, but yet we don't understand. We're still thinking that if only I had this, I'll be happy. And then we come to Krishna consciousness, and we study Bhagavad Gita, we study Srimad Bhagavatam. We know it. Within the first week of being devotees, we understand what material nature is. Yes? That's the beginning of our teachings. That the material nature, everything's temporary. There is no real happiness here. We are eternal souls. We must seek spiritual happiness. But yet, the mind, due to its previous conditionings, is still so habituated. And it drives us to continuously strive for these things. For some it's gross sensory happiness, for others it's subtle. But Krishna is so kind that if we can't give it up ourselves, if Krishna really wants to show special compassion and mercy upon us, he smashes us. And then we think, why is God doing this to me? Because, you know, when a child is engaged in activities that are very dangerous for its present and future, sometimes the parents have to do something that they don't want to do. A good parent does not enjoy. Children are making so much noise, but there is another room for children who make noise. So whoever you may be, parent, please, there is another room. Hare Krishna. Now that child may not want to go to the other room. But still, mother picks him up and takes him to other room. So a good parent will do the needful to protect the child, to protect the child from its own desires. Yes? Child loves to play in the street. Parent takes it off the street. Child may be fighting and crying and running back to the street, but the parent takes it off the street for the child's protection. So in the way, same way, Krishna will smash us, Krishna will warn us, but then our tendency is, as soon as the pain is relieved, we want to run right back in the street. Yes? We do something that's not good. Sometimes we get smashed. We realize, Krishna, you're so merciful. But then as soon as the pain subsides, we run after the same thing again. So Prahlad Maharaj, he is very strongly revealing what is material life. There is no real happiness in this world. Whatever happiness is here, on the material plane, is only getting us attached to something that's going to be taken away in due course of time. Is it worth it? We work, we fight, we strive, we waste so many precious moments to achieve something that 100% guaranteed it will be taken away. Now, if you were to take your whole life savings to buy a flat in South Bombay, and the landlord told you, and the government told you, and everybody else told you, give me all your money, your whole life savings, but 100% guarantee within 1 week we're going to kick you out, and you can't take anything with you. How many of you would give your life savings for that apartment? But factually, that's what we're doing every day. This body, this body is just a temporary residence. I'm sorry to tell you this. Sorry to tell me this too. But this body is just a flat. It's just a flat, flat. That's all it is. Just a temporary place of residence. And Krishna's telling us, and Prahlad is telling us, and all the great acharyas are telling us, and the scientists, and the philosophers, and the doctors, everybody is telling us that there's a 100% unconditional guarantee that your body is going to be finished at any moment, and everything connected to the body is going to be taken away at every moment, any moment. And yet, the whole world mad after these things. Having wars, accumulating massive, horrible karma, which is going to cause them suffering birth after birth after birth, just to get some temporary relief from the burning fire of material existence. Srila Prabhupada quotes this very simple Bengali song. Does anyone know that song? The translation is, I constructed this home for happiness, but unfortunately, there was a fire and everything has now been burnt to ashes. Everything is said right there in a little Bengali song that when it's spoken by Prabhupada. Prahlad Maharaj tells that happiness is very difficult to obtain. But because they are unable to control their senses, they run after so-called happiness of the material world and never come to the right conclusion. Therefore, in the previous verse, Prahlad Maharaj, he says, "My dear Lord, now I have complete experience concerning the worldly opulence, mystic power." Complete experience is, he saw his father. A picture is worth many, many words. He saw his father had unlimited, unparalleled worldly opulence, unbelievable mystic powers. As far as longevity, Lord Brahma gave him boons where he could practically live forever. And other pleasures enjoyed by all living beings, from Lord Brahma down to the ant. As powerful time, you destroy them all. Therefore, because of my experience, I do not wish to possess them. My dear Lord, I request you to place me in touch with your pure devotee and let me serve him as a sincere servant. Prahlad Maharaj really didn't see much difference between Lord Brahma and an ant as far as material longevity and material happiness. What is the lifespan of an ant? What is the amount of opulence and material resources that an ant has? What is the power and the knowledge of an ant? And compare that to you. Yes? You think you're pretty good next to an ant. Even whoever amongst us has really just failed in practically everything we've done, we can get solace by looking at an ant. That I'm bigger than him, and I'm stronger than him, and I'm more intellectual than him. Yes? I'm giving you a little strategy of how to get solace. When you really think you're worthless, and you really think you're failing at everything, and nobody likes you so much because you're not so pretty, and you're not so intelligent, and all these things. Just look at an ant. You could really get puffed up. I could squash you effortlessly. I could end your life in just a second. That is my power. Yes. Well, compared to Lord Brahma, you're not even an ant. Neither am I. You know, an ant may live for how long? A few weeks? And we live for maybe 80 years? So what's the difference in time? Maybe 79 years and 11 months is the difference between the lifespan of you and an ant, providing you live till 80 years old. No, your 80 years compared to Lord Brahma's 311 trillion years. That means 310,999,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, You're not, I mean, you're not even the aunt of an aunt of an aunt. We are simply insignificant. And yet we think we're so cool. We think we're so important. Well, the fact is we are important. But what is our real importance? a devotee has the ultimate pride, but not if it's not illusory pride. We're part of Krishna. Therefore, we're proud of Krishna. Because we're a part, and we're receiving his love and his power and his mercy and his everything, we're proud of him. Therefore, our pride is unlimited. But it's real pride. It liberates us. But we're seeing a difference between somebody on Malabar Hill and somebody on the other, on Chopati Beach. Yeah? We're seeing there's a big difference there. I wish I could be up there instead of here. But Prahlad is seeing the difference between an ant and Brahma. And as far as he's concerned, it's all the same. It's no real difference. Whatever difference is just an illusion. Abrahma bhuvana loka punar avatanojana mamu peite tukontiya punar janmana vidyate. From Brahma loka to Patala loka, they're all places where repeated birth and death, everything is temporary. And everything's relative. If you were to study the psychology of an ant would probably think that it's living a very long life. Yes? Because relative to him, if he could live for a couple months, that's a really long life. And we may think we're living a long life. And Lord Brahma thinks he's living a long life. But from a spiritual perspective, nobody here is living alone. Compared to eternity, what is the difference between our 80 years and Lord Brahma's 311 trillion years? The difference between us is infinitely smaller than the difference between Brahma's 311 trillion years and eternity. That's the lifespan of the soul. The lifespan of the soul is eternal. Never born, never dies. That's what Krishna's given us. He's given us that. He's given us an existence, a personality, with a relationship with him that's eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. That's the gift that God gives every living entity. But in order for there to be love, there has to be alternatives. And we're taking this alternative of material existence, defying the will of God for our own purposes. Prahlad Maharaj is not impressed by any type of material opulence. He's not impressed by any type of mystic powers. Now, many of us, because we read the scriptures, will say, I don't want mystic powers. But how many of you really don't want mystic powers? They're actually really attractive. Can just chant the mantra and whatever prapti siddhi just comes to your hand. You could read people's minds. You could heal your own body just by meditation and mantra. Mystic powers are, you could heal sick people. Your loved one is sick, dying of cancer, wouldn't you like to just put your hand on their head and say, Shanti, Shanti, and then and then the cancer's gone, everything's all right. Wouldn't you like to do that? How many of you would like to do that? See, I told you, you say that you don't want to do that. But many of us probably deep down inside, if it was offered to us, we would take it. Yes. Prahlad would not take it. It's being offered to him. It's easy to say, I don't want it, when it's not being offered to you. But when it's actually offered to you, here, all eight mystic cities, take it, it's yours. But Prahlad, it's being offered to him in this page. And he's saying, no, not at all. Kalavecha Sridhar. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Mahaprakash, he said, I'll give you all eight mystic cities. I'll give you the opulence of Indra. He genuinely didn't want it. He said, my Lord, that's just a disturbance. That will just agitate my mind, having all these cities. I want to be your humble servant, of the servant of your servants. That's all Prahlad wants. He's literally being offered everything and anything. Nadanamna janamna sundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye. Mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatar bhakti rohaiti ki twai. Lord Chaitanya prayed in this way, and Prahlad Maharaj is actually, he's exhibiting it. And five-year-old children, even if he asked for it, a five-year-old child, no one would blame him. Yes. Children need to do that. They're always putting something in their mouth and wanting something. He did not want a long life. He did not want worldly opulence. He did not want mystic cities. He did not want any type of material pleasures. He asks for one thing. I request you to place me in touch with your pure devotee and let me serve him as a sincere servant. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayora Dasa Dasa Dasanu Das. He only wanted to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains that is the highest benediction anyone could ask for. There is nothing greater in all material or spiritual worlds that we can aspire for. And Krishna will only give us that ultimate benediction of being the servant of his servants if, like Prahlad, we want that more than anything else. Now, we all have the chance to be servants of servants as Vaishnavas, as devotees. But the real spirit, the real mood of servant of the servant, we theoretically, intellectually understand that this is the best, to be the servant of the servant. But practically, do we really value the opportunity to associate with devotees? Do we really value serving the devotees? Can we really understand that this is the ultimate benediction that we've been given? We all have it. But how much have we realized it? How much do we appreciate it? How much do we really value it? That will determine our spiritual advancement. How much we truly value the association of devotees. How much we deeply value the opportunity to serve devotees. This Prahlada's teaching is all he wants. He's offered everything and it's all he wants. Just place me in the association of your pure devotees and let me be the servant of the servant. Is there any questions or comments that anyone would like to make? Yes, Ekalavya Prabhu. Just as we know for sure that the sun will rise every morning, we know that, or just the sun will rise after the night, we know that Ekalavya Prabhu's hand will rise after the class.
Thank you for your wonderful class, Maharaj. Very brilliant. You were speaking so nicely about how the mind is the center of all the senses and how the mind interprets the different sense perceptions and colors it and gives us the perception of happiness or distress. So Krishna, he says in Bhagavad Gita that the mind is sometimes the friend and mind is sometimes the enemy. So how do we understand when mind is enemy and how do we understand when the mind is friend? And how can we convert the consciousness from enemy to friend in dealing with these sensory experiences?
Hare Krishna. For one who controls the mind is the best friend, and for one who fails to do so, the mind is the greatest enemy. How do we know? That's why we require the association of devotees. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya. That ignorance is darkness. What is to be done, what is not to be done. So these spiritual masters, they dispel that darkness. They reveal practically what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching. And when our mind is endeavoring to induce our intelligence and our senses to strive for temporary material happiness that is unfavorable for the discharge of devotional service, we should understand that he's in the role of the enemy. And when the mind is endeavoring in such a way that is favorable for Krishna consciousness, and the mind is our best friend. And what is favorable and what is unfavorable? Through guru, through sadhus, through shastra. That is how we learn. So guru, sadhu, and shastra are very, very necessary to guide our life and to help us to discriminate. Hare Krishna. Yes, Bhakti Devi.
You were mentioning about being placed in the Association of Devotees. And I was wondering if we're around devotees and we don't find inspiration when we're with maybe a certain community or people, how do we move away, or how do we connect with the devotees even if maybe we're serving or doing something? Like, is it something of our mind, or is there some to actually connect and have loving relationships with the Vaishnavas?
Hare Krishna. Does everyone know bhakti? I know her since she's about this big. Now she's bigger than me. She's one of the most sincere and enthusiastic girls of our second generation. Hare Krishna. Her parents are my good friends too. But I forgot your question because I was so engrossed in appreciating you.
Thinking about the association of devotees.
Yes.
And if we don't find inspiration when we're around them, and how do we develop that mood of appreciating the devotees?
It is important to hear from Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and these scriptures on a regular basis because they reveal to us how precious the association of devotees is. It is our tendency to take things cheaply. We could take the deities cheaply. And the deity is Krishna himself. It's not a statue of Krishna. It is Krishna. Yes? We should never fall into this illusion that Radha Gopinath is statues of Radha and Krishna. Radha Gopinath is Radha and Krishna. They have descended from the spiritual world to accept our services and attract our hearts in this form. But our tendency is we don't see that. And every devotee is a precious child of God, very, very dear to the Lord. And especially those devotees who are not envious, who are not criticizing others, who are sincerely and honestly trying to engage in devotional service, those devotees, they are the greatest gift of God in our life. We absolutely need them. By serving them, we give the highest pleasure to Krishna. Without serving them, we really have no access to Krishna. Yes? So when we hear the words of Prahlad Maharaj, we understand. Chaitanya Charitamrita, from the beginning to the end, the greatest emphasis is the chanting of the holy names, the serving of the Vaishnavas. Yes? Dhruva Maharaj, when Kuvera offered him any blessing, he only wanted to be the servant of the servant. Prahlad only wants to be the servant of the servant. Sridhar Kolavecha only wanted to be servant of the servant. Narottam Das Thakur, Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, they only want to be the servant of the servant. So it is very important that we hear these things again and again. And what we hear, we should try to practice. Ultimately, it's only by the grace of Krishna that we really gain the appreciation. But what can we do to get the grace of Krishna? To show Krishna we're sincere and we want it. So by hearing of the glories of the Vaishnavas, and by serving the devotees, even if we don't appreciate it so much, just by serving the devotees sincerely, hearing their glories, and chanting the holy names, Krishna will actually give us that appreciation in due course. But if we offend the devotees, it's the greatest offense to the holy name, and Krishna will show his
displeasure to us by taking away an appreciation of devotees. A person who takes pleasure in criticizing other devotees is a person who Krishna has severely withdrawn his mercy from. And we should see it that way. Sometimes people really, really, they like to criticize other devotees. That's a symptom that Krishna is really taking away mercy from that person. Because by Krishna's mercy, we appreciate devotees. And the more we criticize, the more Krishna will take more and more away. And we become like flies. It actually becomes our greatest happiness. But if we avoid criticizing, and because it's Krishna's will, we serve nicely, then Krishna will give us that appreciation. And it'll also give us that realization. If we look for happiness in the association of devotees, Krishna will reveal happiness in the association of devotees. But what does it mean to serve devotees? To serve devotees means my happiness is in their happiness. A real service attitude is not that I'll be in the association of devotees because it makes me happy. That's all right. But a higher service attitude is I'm going to be in the association of devotees to make them happy. And in that consciousness, our service attitude is very pure. And that's where we're really going to find happiness. Our happiness is in giving. Not in expecting. It is our strong tendency. We expect. We expect from Krishna. We expect from the Vaishnavas. But the problem with the mind is we never get what we expect, and even if we do, not for long. Yes? We expect them to be like this, they expect this person to be like this, we expect people in so many ways. But when Prahlad and all of these great souls are talking about serving devotees, they're talking about not expecting something. They're talking about, I want to give to them. I want to contribute something valuable for the quality of the life of the Vaishnavas. And as you give, Krishna reciprocates and gives you an experience, a realization of how he reciprocates with those who serve his servants. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yes.
Maharaj-ji, it's beyond words to express how beautiful it is to have you back amongst all of us. In Jagannath Puri, Jagannath Bhagwan doesn't eat potato, carrots, besides onion and garlic. And even Rishabh Dev didn't eat potato, onion, carrots. What is the reason behind it?
Why Lord Jagannath doesn't eat carrots in Puri? And what? And potatoes also. Let me read this purport today. To make sure your question is according to the class. Because I'm supposed to be the servant of your servant, that means I must answer your question. So it is in connection. That means you must really like carrots and potatoes. Otherwise, this would not be such an interesting question to ask in front of 500 devotees. You don't like them. That's very nice.
So we are taught that it's a very high form of life what is grown underground. So I've not been eating it from 15, 18 years, I think. And then after I went to Jagannath Puri, I mean, there I came to know even Jagannath Bhagwan doesn't eat what I'm not eating.
Just to attract the Jains, he doesn't eat. We can see in your case it worked. Very attractive. Because the tradition in Puri is anything that doesn't have its origin in India and that hasn't been offered for countless thousands of years, they do not offer. That is their tradition. And potatoes are from South America. They're from South America. The western coast of South America is where potatoes' origin is. And the Spanish conquerors, they discovered them there, that the native Indians were growing them and eating them, and they took them back to Europe. And in many countries in Europe, like France, they called potato the devil's vegetable, because it grew underground. And, you know, their idea is, you know, hell is underground. So because potatoes and carrots grow underground, potatoes were considered like Satan's vegetable, and they wouldn't eat them. But then there was like a little ice age that happened in the medieval times, 12th, 13th century, and there was massive droughts, horrible droughts. And during those droughts, those things, and what happened is the temperature became very, very cold, and the vegetables were freezing. They would grow things, and then there would be a massive frost, and everything would just freeze, and then the vegetables, so there was mass starvation. And in most of Europe, like in Ireland, the only hope, the only vegetable that they could really grow was, that wouldn't be killed by frost, was potatoes, because they grew underground. But the French refused to compromise and eat potatoes because they were devil vegetables. They were grow underground. So there was mass starvation, people dying, until finally they ate potatoes. And then the Portuguese, they went to Goa and they brought potatoes. And then the British, because in Britain during the famine days, Britain, potatoes were the main vegetables. It's practically all that grew. So they became very much liking potatoes, and they brought potatoes to India, and then potatoes became aloo. Became very popular. In fact, Prabhupada said potatoes were the king of vegetables. And it's so cheap, anyone can afford them. Yes? But because they came from a foreign country, its origin, Jagannath does not eat. Well, let us say the pujaris won't offer it to Jagannath. But they won't let us in either, because any human being whose origin is from another country is not allowed in the temple either. Yes? But I remember when we were there in Jagannath Puri for a yatra, one of our dear friends was bringing us Jagannath Prasad every day for all our devotees. But then, it's interesting. Some of the cooks for Jagannath, when they're not cooking for Jagannath, they have a catering business, and they cook for pilgrims. So this pujari in Jagannath's temple said the cooks for Jagannath, they don't eat, they'll never cook or offer potatoes to Jagannath. He said, but because they're cooking for you now and they're not offering it, they said, they're now going to cook for you what they cook at home. And you'll like this even better because it has potatoes. So many of the pujaris eat it, but they won't offer it to Jagannath. I guess they'll offer it to some other deity at home. But anyways, this is the tradition, that Jagannath is only offered those things that have its origin in Bharatvarsha. Does that answer your question? But simultaneously, Jagannath could do many things at the same time. Yes, Gaur Hari Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for the wonderful class. In answer to Bhakti Mataji's question, you mentioned that if some devotee is criticizing Vaishnavas, we should understand that Krishna has completely withdrawn his mercy from him. Sometimes there are cases where devotees have been fried out because of certain stray incidents, because of the behavior of some other devotee. It could be a genuine concern. And they go on a rampage, just blaspheming devotees. And sometimes they really need someone who can just with whom they can share their heart. So they may be sincere, but it was some unfortunate incident that has sparked off this distressful condition in their heart. So what should be our attitude towards them? Avoiding them completely or trying to help them out? What steps should we take? Especially if they have confidence in us.
If a person is coming for help, then that is not really criticizing a Vaishnava. A person may see some faults, and if that fault is disturbing them and they're actually, you know, seeking help, then we should definitely try to help them. But if somebody's just criticizing for the sake of bringing another person down in the estimation of others, that is very detrimental. That is a sign that Krishna is withdrawing mercy, and that is the means by which Krishna will withdraw his mercy. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in Koladweep, one Brahmin came to him and said, I have been blaspheming you and I have been blaspheming the Vaishnavas because of my false pride. please tell me, what should I do? And Lord Chaitanya said that when you criticize a Vaishnava, it's like your mouth is drinking poison. You may have your opinion, and I may have my opinion. But our advancement in spiritual life is not based on your opinion or my opinion, or anybody else's opinion. Our advancement is based on Lord Chaitanya's opinion, because he's within the heart. He's the one that reveals love or withdraws it. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has officially stated that when you criticize Vaishnavas, you're drinking poison with your mouth. And the only antidote to that poison is to speak highly of the Vaishnavas and chant the holy names. That is like nectar that counteracts the poison. So yes, sometimes devotees misuse us. Sometimes we may be misused. Sometimes a devotee can cheat us. They could act very inappropriately. To speak to try to help that person, or to if somebody is coming because they've sincerely been hurt by someone and they're telling us about it, that's not really criticizing. They're seeking help. We should definitely try to help them. Real criticism is when we're trying to tear another person down. In the estimation of others. Does that answer your question?
Yes, Maharaj. But one small addition to that question. Sometimes you are trying, he may come with an open mind, but any philosophy that I might try and tell this devotee doesn't just register in his mind just because he's been burnt out in some sense. So what should be the best treatment? I mean, should I just keep hearing him, again solacing him, again hearing, again solacing? What should be done?
If a devotee is burnt out, the first thing is you shouldn't let them burn you out, because you can't help them if they do. You have to analyze, and you can do it on terms that are healthy rather than unhealthy. You can just tell that devotee, I'm willing to help you, but I don't want to hear the faults of others. But it's a matter of time, place, and circumstance. We have to be very careful. If someone's coming to us honestly in desperation because they've been hurt, that is not going to contaminate us so much. But if that person really is envious and really is criticizing, that's extremely contaminating to our heart. And we should not listen. Yes, Radhe Shyam Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you, Ms. Maharaj, for the wonderful class. Connected to the first part of your class, had a question. Although, as Prahlad Maharaj says, Shruti Sukha, the pleasures of this world are only heard. No one has experienced them. No one can get happiness through them. Devotees know it very well, and devotees have heard of the higher taste, and they are experiencing also. At the same time, there is a stage before one can get a tangible higher taste, that one may be hovering on the mental platform and on the platform of sense gratification. So many times when we talk to people about especially the standards that are to be followed for achieving the higher taste. Because if one is again and again stooping down to the lower pleasures, then one will not be able to experience the higher taste. So in that connection, I had a question, Maharaj. Because of the invasion of the age of Kali Yuga, now Kaliraj is sneaking through mobiles and computers and newspapers and all kinds of agents. Recently, I was talking to a boy who had accessed some inappropriate sites from the internet. So when I was trying to admonish him and correct him, he was saying that just like sometimes we end up eating more gulab jamuns. Similarly, you know, I slipped into seeing those bad sites. But I was arguing that it is a lack of character in order to, for a devotee who is practicing Krishna consciousness, to go to such sites, because one is supposed to treat every other woman as a mother other than one's wife. So for a devotee chanting 16 rounds to go to such a thing is a lack of character. He said this is too big a word to call it a lack of character. He said we are living in this day and age when these things are so loosely available. If it is not available, I wouldn't do it. And when I'm put in such a circumstance, I slip into it. That was his argument. I told him, you just can't compare it with eating some extra gulab jamuns. That could be considered a slip or overeating or something like that. So I had this question, Maharaj, that those who are practicing Krishna consciousness, chanting 16 rounds, and they're all aiming at the higher taste, and Lord Krishna says one has to control mind and senses till the point of death. So this kind of slip, which I was asking you now, how serious it is, and such people, how much should they be detained from initiation, waiting for initiation? If their name is in the list, should they wait for some more years? Some kind of punishment should be given to them.
It is not a matter of punishment, but certainly that is a serious, it's a serious transgression, because it so highly pollutes the mind and pollutes the consciousness. Eating extra gulab jamuns does not pollute the consciousness. Better, he compares it to eating cow meat. That pollutes the consciousness. And that's just as readily available. Meat is also readily available everywhere. Alcohol is readily available everywhere. So many sinful things. Gambling these days is readily available everywhere. Illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, they're all available everywhere. This is illicit sex, so it should be taken seriously. Very highly polluting to the mind, and once your mind becomes polluted, many, many people become addicted to it. The more you do it, the more you become addicted to it. So this, internet has its good values in service to the Lord, but it also has very, very deep and very, it's very dangerous. What previously people had to go out of their homes to engage in horrible sinful activities. Now you don't even have to know anyone. You could bring it right in your home all by yourself, and nobody even knows. It's Kali Yuga advancing. And if we start making justifications to these sins of Kali, then we're not going to make spiritual progress. We're going to be captured and conquered by Kali if we start justifying these things. So it's best to take a strong position and be very strict. Does that answer your question? Radhe Shyam Prabhu, I'm sure you would have a much more powerful answer than myself. So we should end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.